Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who show is this? Papa.
Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers reporter as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Honestly, man, I am, my flabber is gasted. My mind is boggled. That was really effing fun. The Lakers beat the Houston Rockets. The show obviously brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and set a $5 lineup to get $50 in free lineups on them. Today on the show, this isn't going to be a full episode. I don't normally record on Saturdays, but it's not every day you get to enjoy and celebrate a win like that. So that is exactly what we're going to do. We're going to pop on here. We're going to celebrate the performance that we just saw from LeBron James. We're going to celebrate the performance that we just saw from Luke Kennard and from DeAndre Ayton. We're going to celebrate the Lakers picking up a playoff win, given how brutal the vibes were, you know, a week or so ago. And we're going to look ahead to what this win and what Kevin Durant's potential injury might mean here for the Lakers moving forward. But the biggest thing is, And this is where we're going to start the show after the break. But the biggest thing is, you don't get this feeling very often. So why not maximize it, right? Why not enjoy it together? And that's exactly what we're going to do. To those who've been paying, you know, who've been still tuning into the shows basically since Luka and since Austin went down, one of the themes of these shows, and really one of the themes even before they went down of this channel, has been, you know what? Maybe the Lakers are fraudulent. Maybe March was all a dream. Maybe this, maybe that. But at the end of the day, given what a ridiculous ask sports fandom is mathematically, you got to stop and smell the roses from time to time. You got to stop and really enjoy the big moments and the great vibes when you can enjoy those great vibes, because you just never know when it's all going to be taken away from you. And tonight was a great example of, like, I said this on the Offside chat. I was not ready to say goodbye to this Lakers team quite yet. You know, we'll get to the offseason and we'll figure out what tweaks the Lakers need to make when that time comes. But for right now, I just am not ready for the Lakers this Lakers season to end. And really importantly, it really seemed like the Lakers also aren't ready for their season to end. And we have been there for seasons where, by the time it's all over, even the players themselves are just like, oh, all right, finally, we can finally move on. But in this case, for the Lakers to be like, no, fuck no, we're winning this game. And for the crowd was incredible in that game. for the Lakers crowd to show up and be like, no, absolutely not. Yeah, this game is going to have its lulls. Yes, Houston is going to make their runs, but you know what? We're going to be right there to pick you up too. And they were. And the Lakers got the stops that they needed to get. They got they hit the shots that they needed to make. They won this game by 9 points, despite missing what felt like 37 free throws. They won by 9 points, despite Houston grabbing 21 offensive rebounds. And despite the Lakers turning the ball over too frequently, like the Lakers, you know, because of the situation that they're in, did commit some errors. I think JJ Redick summed it up really well by saying that the Lakers showed a lot of poise in that, you know, nobody was perfect in this game, but they showed enough poise to get through the mistakes that they made. And I think that is an absolutely perfect way to summarize this. And, you know, yes, we as Lakers fans have lived a very blessed life, right? We have been to the mountaintop and we've spent a lot of time up there. And yes, those championship wins, you know, obviously sit in a category unto themselves. But then there's also this subcategory of great feelings that a sports team can give you. And when a sports team tells you that they care about this shit as much as you do, the fan sitting there at home, living and dying with every missed free throw, missed three-pointer, grabbed rebound, lost rebound, loose ball, whatever it is. When a sports team rises to that moment and tells you through their commitment, through their energy, through their vibes, through their level of give a bleep, we care too. That subcategory is also very important. And this game is always going to sit in that subcategory. I don't know how the rest of the series is going to go. I don't know how the rest of the season is going to go. I don't know if the Lakers are going to extend this series long enough to maybe get Luka Doncic back. And I don't know if they're going to win this series and potentially get Austin Reeves back in the second round against OKC. I don't know. But what I do know is that on this Saturday night, when everybody is looking at LeBron and the Lakers to see what they're made of, the Lakers said, this is what we're made of. And I really enjoyed that. That was fucking awesome. All right, let's go ahead and get into the individual performances here. And we have to start with LeBron. This game really kind of reminded me of those games in the finals against the significantly more talented Warriors rosters. And specifically, honestly, game one against the Kevin Durant Warriors, right? The game, I believe that was the game where J.R. Smith dribbled in the wrong direction and, you know, the LeBron, you know, meme was born. And in that game, I remember I recorded with Adam Mattis. We recorded Locked On NBA that night. And I will never, ever, ever forget talking to Adam there. And he was almost in like a state of mourning. And he and I have talked about it since and how just brutal it was that LeBron basically played a perfect basketball game. And his reward for playing that perfect basketball game and putting his team in a position to potentially steal game one on the road against the Kevin Durant Warriors, right? The best roster that we will ever see maybe in modern times. His reward for that was a teammate dribbling in the wrong direction and forgetting the score and thus losing the basketball game. And Adam was just beside himself, sad after that game. And I totally agreed. It was just a brutal, brutal watch. And in this one, though, LeBron utilized all of those same tricks. He took the air out of the basketball. He slowed the game down. He sped the game up when it needed to be sped up. He knocked down whatever shots that he needed to knock down. He dished out 13 assists right and got the right teammates involved, set good hard screens, played impactful defense, did absolutely everything that the Lakers needed of him today. And especially at this age of 41 years old. And in the end, this time, after playing what I consider, all things considered, a perfect basketball game. Yes, there are like nits to pick if you want to. But his reward this time, fortunately, was beating the Rockets, you know, and I thought he was masterful in this game. Just absolutely understood every single way and every adjustment to every adjustment that was made against him. He understood which guy needed to get the ball and which guy needed to get going early. I thought the Lakers really involved DeAndre Ayton a lot early in this game, and I thought that really set a tone for the kind of game that he played. We'll talk about him again in a little bit. But LeBron was just spectacular. You know, I loved that, you know, early in the game, he was attacking a little bit more from the perimeter, a little bit more from like the, you know, from above, you know, the break and above. And then over the course of the game, as he no longer had that step, he, you know, got into the post and just started going through guys. And when he started doing that, Houston had zero counters to it because they don't want to double him in the post, knowing that he is going to make the skip pass that breaks their backs. And also knowing, by the way, that the Lakers are going to have at least one shooter on the court at all times who is capable of breaking their backs, whether that's Luke Kennard and or Rui Hachimura. And so when LeBron was in single coverage and he had Josh Okogie, or if he had Amen Thompson, or if he had Jabari Smith, or if he had anybody basically in the post, he was just going right through them and putting them in the basket. And whether it was that, making the right pass, he made some absolutely spectacular passes tonight that, you know, every time the Lakers needed a big play, LeBron had his fingerprints all over it. And it is absolutely insane. Absolutely insane that at 41 years old, he's playing a game like that against a team this young and this athletic as the Houston Rockets are. Yes, Houston is shorthanded. They didn't have Kevin Durant. They didn't have Fred VanVleet. They didn't have Steven Adams. Also, points to Lakers bench, right? There were a couple moments where they showed Luka and Austin side by side on the bench. And it was just like, oh, God, please, Lakers, please win this game and give those guys a chance. And that is exactly what LeBron went out there and did tonight. Played. I can't wait to go back and rewatch this game and find all of the nuances and how exactly LeBron was able to dominate this game to the extent that he did. His final line, 38 minutes, which honestly, kudos to JJ Redick for keeping him under 40 minutes, given how much the Lakers are going to need from him in the wins that they get. But LeBron James, 38 minutes in this one, 9 of 15 from the field, 1 of 2 from three-point range, only 2 free throws. He missed both of them, only shot 2 free throws in this one. There was one referee in this game, Tyler Ford, the bald guy, the bald white guy. And every time I see him referee against the Lakers, I know that they're gonna, there's going to be some fuckery. And it was the case again today. It is absolutely insane that the Laker, that LeBron spent as much time as he did in the post, that Houston plays as physically as they do, and he only shot 2 free throws. That is unbelievable. Makes zero sense whatsoever. But anyway, the, you know, the rest of LeBron's line here, he grabbed 8 rebounds, dished out 13 assists, had a couple of steals, had a block shot, had only 2 turnovers in this game, which really, really matters here to the Lakers, and was a game high plus 11, and absolutely warranted that he would be a game high plus minus. Every time he walked off of the court, every Laker fan was like, all right, when's he coming back? Please, JJ, even Richard Jefferson, who, you know what, like I enjoyed ESPN's broadcast of this one, minus the fact that it was in 720p. But like Richard Jefferson, like he can't mask his biases here. You know he's a LeBron guy. And like every time LeBron subbed out, it was like 30 seconds later that Jefferson was like, all right, you got to wonder how long JJ Redick can go without LeBron James here. You got to wonder how long. It's like it was only a matter of time until RJ would look down the bench like, JJ, his former coworker, by the way, JJ. Yo, JJ, bring LeBron back. Like, it was just amazing. But we all shared the sentiment. It was, and the reason that we shared it was because LeBron, at the ripe age of 41 years old, was easily, easily the best player on the court today. The only guy, honestly, who gave him any kind of run for his money for best player on the court was probably Luke Kennard. Yeah, that guy. In the offside chat, I think it was LFR producer and personal friend, one of my absolute favorite people, Genie, who said who started spelling his name Luca Nard. Unbelievable joke. Unbelievable bit. Really, really good. But Luke Kennard tonight scored 27 points. He also played 38 minutes. 9 of 13 from the field, 5 of 5 from three-point range, 4 of 6 from the free throw line, grabbed 4 rebounds, just out 3 assists. He had a lot of assists that led to assists, had 3 turnovers in this one, was a plus 7. And again, he had those 27 points. And I just, every time I watch him play, and I know I tweeted out the other day or however long ago it was, like, how did nobody tell me about the chops, the on-ball chops that Luke Kennard had? And like, I had some people kind of like, I thought I got some fair responses, right? That like early on in his career, whether it was in Detroit or somewhat in Atlanta, but which obviously happened a little later in his career, seeing as that's where he came from. But like in Detroit, I guess he had shown some on-ball chops, but he was such a good shooter that eventually like the focus became his ability as a floor spacer, and nobody really fully tapped back into that. I got a couple of responses that were kind of like, well, if you would have seen my, he's like, calm down, man. But, I also wonder, like, had teams known that Kennard had the on-ball chops that he's shown here for the Lakers, especially since Luka and Austin went down, I don't think he goes for Gabe Vincent and a second-round pick if this was who teams thought that they were trading away or letting walk or however else he departed those former teams. He was special in this game. And, you know, over the course of the game, they were RJ and Legler were kind of talking about how, you know, Kennard shoots a great percentage, but the volume isn't always there, and they wish that he would kind of force it a little bit. And it was almost like he heard them, because then he took a couple of threes with guys closing out hard to his shooting hand and knocked those ones down too. And I just thought was absolutely brilliant on offense. And is this exactly the game that you're going to get from him from here on out the series? Probably not. Although I do think he does present some issues for Houston. They have a lot of like long physical defenders, but they don't have, like, you have Amen Thompson, who is like long, physical, and fast, and just a ridiculous athlete, right? But outside of that, they don't have a lot of guys who have crazy good foot speed. And when you're guarding a shooter of Kennard's caliber, you need great feet. Like, you need to be able to navigate screens. You need to be able to sprint and keep up with Kennard and stay attached, whether he's on or off of the ball. You also, and this is where I think Şengün kind of hurts the Rockets. You also need to be able to switch. And I don't think the Rockets want Sengun switched out onto Kennard. You know, I think that, you know, that that combination of not necessarily having incredible foot speed and also having a big that the Lakers can pick on in the pick and roll. And then also you have, you know, at times LeBron setting the screen, which completely changes the math on the amount of, you know, attention that can be paid to Kennard in those spots. And then if you have LeBron setting a screen for Kennard on the same side of the court as Rui, then you're also taking away the amount of effort and attention that can be paid to either Kennard or LeBron, who gets downhill after that screen on that side of the court. And I just thought that, you know, the combinations offensively that the Lakers were running, and I thought JJ coached a phenomenal game in this one, the kind of game that like, okay, all right, last year is behind us, you know, but I just thought it was a, you know, Kennard, I can't say enough about what he just did out there. And, you know, we'll see if it continues. We'll see what adjustments are made. I think that Thompson is going to have to spend a lot more time on Kennard. You know, they're going to try to do, you know, a lot more switching on non-Sengun pick and rolls. And maybe they just live potentially with Sengun guarding Kennard in space, or, you know, maybe they try blitzing Kennard, but you can't really blitz if it's LeBron setting the screen, because now all of a sudden you have LeBron downhill against a compromised defense. And it's the same problems that LeBron Austin pick and roll and two man game sets create for teams. It's if anything, not saying Kennard is a better player than Austin, but Kennard's such a better shooter than Austin that it kind of changes the math and almost makes that pick and roll potentially slightly more dangerous, or at the very least teams, like there was a moment in the game where they kind of asked Richard Jefferson about JJ calling Kennard a blender starter. I thought that RJ kind of missed the point there. Kennard's a blender starter because teams see him open and they freak the bleep out. They freak out when they see him standing out there at the 3-point line with the basketball, because they know what happens if that ball leaves his hand and he has a clean look. So like that's the blender starter, right? That reaction to Kennard having the ball in that spot, that starts the blender. And if the blender is already started and the ball rotates over to Kennard, he is even better at speeding up that blender to the point where you have like smoothie shooting out of the top of the blender. And I thought that's what he did. Either he started the blender or he finished the blender. And either way, the Lakers were just a phenomenal basketball team, you know, for this situation when LeBron and Luke shared the court. I don't know that there are very many sustainable adjustments that Ime Udoka can make to the problems that LeBron and Kennard present, because, you know, yeah, you could maybe play less of Reed Shepard or less of Alperen Sengun, but the Rockets struggled to get to 98 points tonight. And if you remove a few Reed Shepard minutes, or if you remove a few Alperen Sengun minutes, then I really don't know what Houston does on offense. So yeah, the Lakers, you know, need to continue applying that pressure with those in those minutes with LeBron and Luke on the court together. Man, what a shouts to Pelinka, man. I don't think he knew what he was getting when he got him. I don't think anybody knew that Kennard had this in his bag, but I sure am glad that it turned out to be the case. DeAndre Ayton, man. DeAndre Ayton's line on his own, he played 35 minutes, went 8 of 10 from the field, 3 of 3 from the free throw line, grabbed 11 rebounds, 3 of them of the offensive variety, had a couple of assists, Remember, I talked about the assist to assist kind of deal with Luke Kennard. Had a blocked shot and was a plus 7 in a game. He scored 19 points. His counterpart in this game, Alperen Şengün, played 36 minutes, went 6 of 19 from the field. I think a lot of the discomfort that Ayton presents with his size and physicality in this game led to that 6 of 19 finishing field goal line there for Şengün. I thought Şengün did a lot of his damage against Hayes and not very much of it against Ayton. And that's all that we could have possibly asked of DeAndre Ayton in this game was like, hey, finish the opportunities that you know you're going to get because the Lakers are going to continue putting Şengün in the pick and roll. Make sure you continue taking advantage of those shots and making those shots. His flip shot was really going tonight. Knocked down a couple of middies, you know, had some lob dunks, had, converted on offensive rebounds as well. A really good offensive game here for DeAndre Ayton. But I actually was also really impressed with the defensive game that he played, where not only was he so physical that I thought he kind of bothered Şengün in some moments, but I also thought that like in switch moments where he was forced to guard on the perimeter, he actually handled those moments quite well. And, you know, there were several moments over the course of this game on both sides of the ball where I was like, damn, okay. All right, DA, you know, and it was nice because I thought the Lakers did a very good job of getting him involved early. He was engaged right from the go in this one, and that engagement, yes, it's swayed, and there were some moments there where it was like, oh, come on, man, you got to get that rebound. But overall, just a phenomenal game here for DeAndre Ayton, and look, if the Lakers want any chance whatsoever at winning this series, it involves him playing like this for three more games. If the Rockets want any chance whatsoever at winning this series or getting back into the series, then Alperen Şengün cannot be outplayed by DeAndre Ayton, which was absolutely the case in this game. Last person I want to shout out here, and I'll jump into some of your guys's. You guys left some super comments, and I'll wrap up the show there. But JJ Redick, I don't have him listed there on the rundown, but I thought JJ coached a very good game in this one, and I thought he really maintained his cool, and that was especially obvious given what we saw from Ime Udoka in this game. Now, we'll see between games 1 and 2, which adjustments are made, and then we will see within game 2 the adjustments to the adjustments and how quickly JJ can navigate those waters. But I loved that he took a momentum timeout in that fourth quarter. I loved the way that the Lakers, you know, they closed the first half pretty in pretty disappointing fashion. And it was pretty clear that the coaching staff really got on them at halftime about like, look, we don't have the margin of error to you know, just fart around for a few minute stretch here and there. And if the Lakers, like, you know, it was really clear that, you know, he and his coaching staff really stressed to the Lakers, if you guys are going to win this series or if you guys are going to win this game, you're going to have to play at this level for as much as you possibly can. And is it fair to ask them, a team that, you know, is probably athletically capable of playing at this level, to play this level for 48 minutes? Probably not. But in terms of like what the Lakers were able to realistically bring to the table tonight, I thought Redick, you know, push the right, a lot of the right buttons, stuck with guys, right? Where, you know, last year I could have seen him getting a little frustrated with Rui, or I could have seen him getting a little frustrated with Vando, or getting a little frustrated with Jake and not going back to those guys. The minute allotment in this one, I thought were really good. I don't really know why Rui is leading the way in minutes with 42. I think that's a little too many. But outside of Rui, LeBron being able to play 38 and getting 12 minutes of rest in a game with this slim of margins is incredible work. Marcus Smart, you know what his body has put him through the last few years. So him being able to play only 34 minutes in this game was huge. Loved seeing Jared Vanderbilt and Jake LaRavia play exactly the same number of minutes. I actually think you could probably add another couple of minutes to their numbers there and take out maybe like 4 minutes from Rui's numbers. Jackson Hayes played 13 minutes. I would like to see Hayes's minutes more closely aligned to Capella's. Capella played 11, Hayes played 13, and it felt like way too many of Hayes's minutes coincided with Şengün's minutes, and Şengün was just pushing around like a rag doll out there. So that'll be one potential adjustment that the Lakers could make here. Bronny got out there for 4 minutes in the first half, and you know, they survived. I don't know how many more minutes of Bronny that they're going to get or need. Overall, I thought JJ coached a really good game. The Lakers ran plenty of organized offense. There was obviously the momentum timeout in the fourth quarter, but I thought over the course of the game, the messaging was very clear, and you could kind of see after timeouts what was stressed during that timeout. So, and then also after the game, you know, it's a lot easier for JJ to talk, you know, in calmer tones after a win. But I also thought that he, you know, just based off of the quotes that I've seen over the course of me talking here, that he, you know, clearly seems to understand why it was the Lakers were able to look the way that they did. So, you know, well done to JJ there. Let's see that continue. If he can outcoach Ime Udoka in the series, on top of LeBron being potentially the best player in the series, and on top of Ayton even playing Şengün, even that's like enough of these things add up to a Lakers series win. All right, we're going to dive into some of your guys' super comments. And before we do that, we're going to play the most important sound on the show, that being Alperen Şengün running up and down the court. I just love the end. Just like, wee! I'm also obviously contractually obligated to play this. Stop watching! All right, let's go ahead and go up to the top here. Laker Pride, 6189. Kevin better get those burner accounts ready to go. Kevin Durant's injury here, I legitimately thought that it was gamesmanship on the part of the Houston Rockets. Now, I hadn't asked around about it. It seemed to be such clear gamesmanship that I didn't ask anybody about it. But ESPN did show KD kind of going through shoot around and trying to, you know, get that knee loose, and he looked really bad. Like, he was kind of limping off of the court after just going through shoot around. Apparently he banged knees with somebody in practice going for a loose ball, and his knee has felt pretty bad since. And I truly don't know where Houston gets enough offense without KD out there. And, you know, nobody understands the plight of a fan base losing guys to injury at the worst possible time more than Lakers fans do right now. It would suck to not see. Also, like, you just don't know how many opportunities you're going to get to see LeBron and Kevin Durant share the court at the same time. But in the interest of the Lakers' chances here, this changes everything. Like, Houston, their half-court offense was a disaster out there. The only times that Houston looked honestly competitive with the Lakers or obviously better, you know, when they cut into runs or they started runs of their own, was when the Lakers turned the ball over and they were, and Houston was able to get out in transition. Short of Houston creating extra possessions via the their own offensive rebounds or the aforementioned turnovers that allowed, or you know, long rebounds or whatever that allowed Houston to get out in transition, Houston's offense was just really, really ugly. And you know, it was a lot of like Alperen, please save us, and Reed, please save us, and Amen Thompson, please try to get by your guy. Not a whole bunch of movement. I mean, Kevin Durant played like 78 games this year, and you know, Houston as a team was so reliant on him offensively that to lose him right before game one and basically have no reps going into the series without KD, I think completely changes the outlook of the series. Doesn't mean that the Lakers are definitely winning. I don't know. Certainly feel a hell of a lot better about it. I obviously really hope that KD is okay and that he's able to go in the series. But as far as like, you know, the impact of that and this new reality that both of these teams are living in, the game plan that the Lakers had today is pretty replicable, and I just don't know how many actual adjustments that Ime Udoka can make when it's just like he doesn't have the offensive firepower or the creativity or whatever to actually get that done. So and then also, you know, you look at KD on the bench, and you know, they showed Fred VanVleet, you know, talking Reed Sheppard through some stuff, and you know, I just don't think Kevin Durant is the guy who's going to like turn the vibes around when things are going really poorly. So, yeah, just a really unfortunate set of circumstances here for Houston. And if KD misses like one or two more games in the series is probably over. Let's see. The next question here that we have comes from R. Jones LAL. Can the Lakers still pay Luke and Austin? Does AR-15 lose leverage? I don't think he loses any leverage here. I think Luke Kennard, I don't know, maybe he did become a lot more expensive. I don't know, but you know, as it stands right now, I think he's making like $8 million bucks a year, maybe 13. I think it's 13. Luke Kennard contract. I think it's like 13 million, 11 million right now. I could see Kennard getting a raise to like $15 million a year. I don't think, you know, he goes significantly higher than that. Let's see. I want to see how old he is. He's 29 years old. So paying him on the other side of 30, he is an incredible shooter, but he does have those defensive liabilities. I don't really see a team going too much higher than 15. I would say in that like 13 to 15 million a million dollar a year range would be kind of where I'd be comfortable with him at. And at that point, like the Lakers don't have bird rights, but they have enough guys who do have bird rights that you can just pay Kennard. He's going to have a small cap hold as well. You could just pay Kennard, you know, give him a decent little raise for like a, you know, 2 or 3 year contract. He's relative, like the path to bringing him back is relatively simple. It's the guys like, you know, Rui, who has a bigger cap hold, or LeBron, who has a huge cap hold, right? Like those are the guys that, you know, there has to be some flexibility, some potential sacrifice, some real conversation as far as like how the math can be math there. Kennard's potential return, I think, is relatively easy to chart. And look, this being such a win for Rob Pelinka, he doesn't typically let wins like this just walk out the door.
unless it's like Jordan Goodwin.
Justin Tindall writes, Rob is smoking a cigar tonight over the Luke trade. Yeah, you guys know how I feel about Rob Pelinka, but that was honestly a season-saving win, right? Like, no, if Gabe Vincent is on their team right now, and if they don't make the Luke Kennard trade, or even if they make a different trade for a similarly talented player who doesn't have this secret skill set, like waiting in the wings, then the Lakers season is probably over, right? Like if it played out exactly the same way after the trade went down. And you know, shouts to Rob. If he knew about this and made that kind of a trade, you know, with some kind of secret understanding of what Kennard can actually do on the ball, then kudos to him. I don't think that's how this played out, but I don't care. Like, it was a huge win, and I'm just going to enjoy it for now. We got one more here. This is from, let's see. Yeah, let's run UNLV. Nearly every path to a series win here also involves winning game two. This is a must-win game. This wasn't a sustainable way to play. LeBron rules. I don't know that this wasn't sustainable. Like, I think it was fairly replicable so long as Kevin Durant is out. Now, if Kevin Durant is out, then yeah, I would probably be a little, or if Kevin Durant does come back, then yeah, I would probably say that the Lakers didn't play well enough to beat the Rockets, who also happen to have Kevin Durant. But if KD misses game two and the Lakers, you know, can win game two, that is a lot of margin for error there. And that's the path here. Now, as far as like, if KD does come back, I do think that the Lakers learned some stuff offensively that KD doesn't really impact. And I think most namely, putting obviously Şengün in the pick and roll as frequently as they possibly can. And I think eventually we'll see some screener for screener stuff that forces the switch that leads to Şengün guarding LeBron when LeBron sets a screen for like Luke Kennard or something like that. Like, that's something that eventually the Lakers will probably go to. But also, like, you know, so everything involving Şengün defensively, I think that's something that the Lakers can continue to pick at. That scab is something that they can continue to pick at. And KD doesn't really impact that. I also think LeBron going into the post is something that KD doesn't really impact, right? Like, he can shade over and he's long enough that maybe his help dissuades some of the shots that LeBron is taking. But also, LeBron really kind of picked them apart from the mid-range with fadeaway jumpers that KD wouldn't really impact. So that makes me kind of think that like those two things offensively are something that the Lakers can, and also the kinds of turnovers that the Lakers had in this game, especially when like when Houston got back into it at the end of the first half, there, it wasn't a matter of like Houston doing incredible things defensively. You had a play where like Rui was dribbling up the court and then just like somehow forgot that there was a Rockets player right next to him, right? You had some bad passes. You had some bad decisions. The Lakers played a little faster than they needed to. Those lapses in focus and discipline, you know, those are things that, yeah, like they do happen sometimes. But that really doesn't feel like something that Kevin Durant does to you defensively. So if the Lakers can clean up some of that stuff, yes, Houston's offense gets significantly better when Kevin Durant is there, so there goes some margin for error. But I never thought that this series was unwinnable, even with Kevin Durant in it. The Lakers would have to play better than they did tonight. but I think they're capable of it. And, you know, I think we'll see how that would potentially go. Hopefully. I do legitimately hope that Kevin Durant is okay. All right. I told Jen that this was only going to be a 20-minute show, and I promised her that we were going to hang out and celebrate that win together. So I am going to peace out of here and edit this show as quickly as I possibly can. And let you guys enjoy this and the rest of the week. Like, how nice is it that we get like all day tomorrow to just kind of like sit in this, like these good vibes and all that. Great stuff here. Great stuff. And an absolutely vintage performance from LeBron James that I will never, ever, ever forget. Awesome, awesome game to watch. So until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin. This was brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and play a $5 lineup to get a $50 worth of free lineups. And I did play a lineup tonight, and you know, unfortunately, right after I played it, we got the Kevin Durant news. I was waiting on it and figured like it was close enough to the game that like KD wouldn't be scratched, and then he was, and that lineup, you know. But anyway, yeah, have a great rest of your evenings. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow, right, with a mailbag episode. See you guys then.
Bye, everyone.